Welcome to a new episode of Drops of Science, the multilingual scientific podcast that selects for you the latest news in natural sciences. We open today's episode by talking about symbiosis, particularly the advantages of sharing the same home. Dr. Goto and collaborators from Kyoto University studied hard substrates, such as rocks found in warm and shallow waters, discovering the existence of symbiotic communities in the dead coral gravel of the Kii Peninsula in western Japan. Dead coral rocks are key microhabitats for various types of benthic fauna, such as clams and worms. However, interactions in cryptofauna, meaning animals that live in hidden habitats, have not always received much attention. The research team studied Ecura worms called Bonellia, known to live in dead coral rocks, and observed their burrows using a technique called microcomputed tomography scanning. The investigation made it possible to discover that the burrows of this worm host three species of commensals, including a polychaete called Oxydromus fauveri and two new species, a bivalve and an amphipod, which have been called respectively Basterozia bonellifila and Leucotoe bonellie. The presence of three species inside the Bonellia burrows has a profound significance, as it determines that, even in apparently hostile and sterile environments, a complex community structure is yet to be discovered. Let's now talk about corals' resilience, the ability to adapt and survive environmental changes. A team led by Dr. Kenkel from the University of Southern California studied the coral Orbicella fagiolata to determine how it would withstand increasingly high water temperatures, as coral reefs are among the ecosystems most in crisis due to climate change and tourism. The species is very common but highly declining, and it has been observed that populations living closer to the coast can maintain high coral cover and recover more quickly from yellowing due to changes in pH and temperatures of ocean waters, compared to their offshore counterparts, who take more time to recover. However, it is unclear whether this variation in the origin of thermal resistance is hereditary. The research team therefore wanted to evaluate whether tolerance to high temperatures had a genetic basis by collecting reproductive cells, such as gametes, from two different coral reefs in the Florida Keys, one located near the coast and the other farther out in the open ocean. The scientists then carefully raised the corals in a controlled environment, exposed the coral larvae to thermal stress conditions in the laboratory, and then measured their survival. Contrary to expectations based on adult thermal tolerance models, pure larvae from the more remote area, which theoretically had a lower tolerance, survived better and showed fewer signs of stress at the genetic level when exposed to high temperatures compared to pure coastal larvae and hybrid. The unexpected finding that coral larvae from a less heat-tolerant population had better survival and showed fewer signs of stress suggests that the ability of coral offspring to withstand heat could be influenced by various factors, including whether and how often their parents have experienced yellowing in the past or other environmental pressures. Scientists hope to deepen understanding of how corals adapt to environmental changes and transmit resilience by examining the impact of coral history and their relationships with other organisms, as well to know the overall health of coral reefs. From the aquatic environment, we now move to the aerial one, now talking about a group of extremely recognizable and widespread animals, known as bats. There are more than 1,400 species worldwide, but despite their large modern presence, they represent one of the groups with the poorest fossil evidence. In fact, paleontologists think that at least 80% of ancient species are missing. The lack of these fossils makes it difficult to understand their evolutionary history and answer questions such as when they started flying, when they developed echolocation, and much more. The bat fossils that usually reach us are fragmentary, such as teeth, or complete specimens that are unfortunately crushed by rock layers. Dr. Hand and collaborators have found an extraordinary piece in France, an almost completely intact skull inside the limestone belonging to the Wielasia CJ species. This is an extraordinary discovery, as it was possible to measure precisely the bone of the inner ear, and by comparing it with bats that carry out echolocation today with those that don't, it was discovered that this fossil is more similar to echolocators. Considering that the cave is about 50 million years old and that echolocation was thought to be typical only of modern bats, not only the possibility now exists that this phenomenon evolved in their ancestors, but it even developed before whales. In addition, finding bats in caves implies that cave resting behavior had evolved in bats by the end of the early Eocene. This period saw the start of a significant global climate cooling, which may have been an evolutionary factor driving bats to congregate in caves for the first time. Continuing the evolution path, we now talk about two species of orchid belonging to the Godiera genus, present in the Izu Islands in Japan. Dr. Suetsugu and collaborators from Kobe University studied the Godiera henry and Godiera similis species in morphological, molecular, and ecological terms. The henry species, having a long flower tube, is pollinated exclusively by a bumblebee. The similis species is pollinated by a wasp. Only recently it was thought that solely the henry species was present on the most remote island, but a more focused analysis revealed that this conclusion needed to be corrected. Godiera henry on this island was not pollinated by the bumblebee, but by a wasp. And not just anyone, but the same that pollinates the close relative similis. This seemed strange to the researchers, as the wasp's mouth parts are much shorter than the length of the henry flower tube, a length perfectly achieved by the bumblebee. The research group decided to get to the bottom of the matter and made a genetic comparison between the henry species of this island with those of the mainland. With enormous surprise, scientists discovered that all the specimens on the island had been misclassified. It was not a pure line, but a hybrid between the two orchid species. The research team hypothesizes that when Godiera henry first arrived on the island, it must have been visited by chance by a wasp, precisely because the bumblebee was not present on the island. This wasp probably was carrying some pollen from its usual orchid, the similis, and would have landed on the newly arrived henry by hybridizing it. This changed the appearance of the orchid such that it could now attach pollen to its replacement pollinator insect and thus establish itself on the island in its new hybrid form. This discovery highlights how plants in ecological relationships adapt to changing circumstances. Let's remain within plants to talk about algae, now known as part of the modern man's diet. Following a new discovery, now we know that our ancestors also use it as food. Dr. Buckley and collaborators from the University of York have found archaeological evidence demonstrating how seaweed was already consumed in the Mesolithic about 8,000 years ago. The researchers studied the biomarkers extracted from the dental tartar of 74 individuals from 22 archaeological sites, revealing a widespread consumption of algae and aquatic plants. Biomolecular evidence revealed consumption of red, green, or brown algae, other freshwater aquatic plants, with one sample from Orkney also containing evidence of brassica, most likely sea kale. According to scientists, this discovery suggests that the nutritional benefits of algae were understood by ancient populations so much that they did not abandon this food even when agriculture took over. We move now to the University of Otago, where scientists studied the impact of petroleum-based and biodegradable plastic on certain fish activities, such as escape performance, daily swimming, and aerobic metabolism. The species considered was Fosterigion capito, on which it was observed that when exposed to the petroleum-derived polymer, it appeared to have slower maximum swimming speed and took longer to respond to stimuli, as well as they have reduced the distance traveled by 25%. they also consumed much more oxygen during recovery from the stress test. The biopolymer effects were minor, but not zero. Fish exposed to biodegradable plastic, explicitly created in the laboratory, negatively influenced their maximum speed during escape. With the increasing number of microplastics in the ocean, a switch to biodegradable polymers could benefit marine organisms due to the smaller effect found compared to petroleum-based polymers. Still, it cannot be considered the silver bullet, as they can, however, even if in smaller quantities, negatively affect animals exposed to them. Today's latest news is dedicated to bold tamarins, primates that live in the Amazon River. The species, scientifically named Saguinus bicolor, is in critical danger of disappearing and is known to use vocal calls for communication. Unfortunately, human activity can cover the acoustic signals animals produce. To overcome this problem, the species opt for other strategies, as underlined by research published by Dr. Sobrosa and collaborators from the National Amazon Research Institute. The group studied the various types of speech, with greater emphasis on the vocalization that calls for danger, important as many tamarins are killed by being hit by cars when they cross the road to move between forest areas. The researchers observed the species for a year using radio collars, and while physically following the groups, they measured the intensity of the alpha female's alarm call and visually counted how many times the individuals rubbed their chest and lower parts on the ground and trees, spreading an odorous waxy substance to signal the direction in which they were heading. The results of the observations led to the discovery that the tamarins do not lower their voice in front of traffic. They keep it high, but add to this the marking of the area with odors. Not only that, but the occurrence of olfactory marking increased with the amplitude of anthropogenic environmental noise. This complementarity of two types of communication is essential for the species, as it allows its survival in the face of ever-increasing urban noise. This concludes today's episode of Drops of Science. Thanks for being with us. See you soon, and good science!